uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California and Oregon to North Carolina and West Virginia and points in between. Streaming down from outer space live on the Sirius satellite radio system. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American FM. Special greetings to our new listeners on WPTT in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, picking up starting today, carrying our program. And also, Mercury goes retro. This is, I know nothing about astrology other than this one thing that I have one publisher, one of the guys who publishes my book. I have 14 books in print. One of my publishers is a smaller publisher. Some of them are really big, you know, it's like Random House and whatnot. But one of my smaller publishers, he literally will not answer the phone during the 3 or 4 weeks that happens a couple times a year when Mercury goes retrograde because he says everything goes wrong. Well, you would think that it has happened. It actually starts, I think, on the 21st of this month. But anyhow, for those of you listening in Santa Fe and Los Alamos on KRSN, their satellite receiver has croaked, so we're feeding the show to them over our music on hold system. please forgive the audio quality, but we are all, Mark Bentley at KRSN is really doing his best here, and we're going to get this fixed as quickly as we can, get the quality back up. And, of course, everybody else in the country pulling it off the satellite, the ABC Star Guide satellite, the Jones Stream, should have just a fine stream. So it'll be a beautiful day. Lots in the news today. In the second hour of our program, what role does labor have to play in the war? We're going to get into that. We're going to have David Swanson on. I had a long conversation on the telephone this morning with Eric in Jim Jeffords' office asking why Senator Jeffords voted for this bankruptcy bill. And I will tell you about that as we go through the program. We've got Joe Biden's rebuttal on that. This is going to bite, I have a feeling, a bunch of Democratic senators in the butt in a way that they simply had not imagined. But we'll get to that in the second or third hour of the program. I want to lead the program, though, with what I think is one of the biggest stories of the day, certainly one of the most important issues, and that is the phonying up of news. The signature, the hallmark of dictatorial fascistic regimes, regardless of what they call themselves, because I would put the former Soviet Union, having been there and having lived within 40 miles of the East German border for a year back when it was East Germany and having spent time in the Soviet Union, I would even put them in that category, even though they called themselves communists. One of the hallmarks is manipulation and control of the news. And it's happening right here at home. And it's getting weirder and weirder. I mean, the whole thing with Jeff Gannon and Karen, what's her name? Karen Ryan. I was going to say Karen Hughes. Now she's off. She's back in the former TV reporter, the main advisor to George W. The New York Times did a remarkable story this weekend on this and some excellent detail on it. And I wanted to get on John Stauber. John is one of my favorite people. He's just absolutely brilliant. He's written some incredible books. Toxic Sludge is Good for You, one of my favorites. I quote it, in fact, in my book, Unequal Protection, and because it was such a hoot to read. It's still, back in 1995 it came out, still one of the best books out there. His newest book, Banana Republicans, which is also brilliant. He's the executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy. PRWatch.org is their website. And one of the real experts in this country on the sickness in the public relations industry, shall we say. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
It's great to have you here, John. Give us a quick overview on what the Times is reporting about this weekend.
This is a story that people have to read. As you mentioned, we've been reporting on propaganda in the media for over a decade, and also particularly on the widespread use of fake news. Literally thousands of TV news stories are produced every year by PR firms for corporate and government clients. They're given to TV news producers and TV news directors, and then those TV news directors air these as real news stories.
Yeah.
Well, in all my decade plus of investigating this, I've never seen the mainstream media do an expose on how fake news is getting aired, not one or two times, but thousands and thousands of times. And this is the piece to read. You can link to it off PRWatch.org. And what's especially interesting is this excellent multi-page expose looks at how the Bush administration over the last 4 years has spent $250 million of our tax dollars on their propaganda schemes, and especially this process of preparing fake news stories and getting them aired as if they were real TV news.
Yeah, now this is really a whole new thing. Back in 1968, when I was 17 years old, I was going to college. That's when I started in radio, actually, late 67, early 68. And by 69 or 70, I had moved out of being a DJ and I was into doing news. And I did news for 7 years. And in the early days, and this was back when it was the number one radio station in Lansing, Michigan, which is a medium market town. But this was back in the days when radio stations actually hired news staffs. What I did in the morning was I went out and I went down to the state capitol building. We were in the capitol, and I would, you know, go to the governor's office and whatnot. I'd go to the Lansing Police Department, and read the police blotter for the evening. I mean, I had a beat that I worked in the morning, and then I'd come back and I'd interview people and I'd write up the stories and I'd do the tape. And a part of my job was to go through the news releases, because every single day in the mail, we would get 20, 30, 40, 50 news releases. This would be this stack of junk mail, and it was, you know, I was low man on the totem pole when I started out, and my job was to go through. And they always said on the top, news release, right? For immediate release, or, you know, hold until January 7th at 4 p.m. or whatever. And then it would say, you know, Monsanto Corporation announces the new product, blah, blah, blah. And you knew what it was. You knew it was a news release. Occasionally, maybe one, you know, out of literally somewhere between 30 and 50 a day, we might take one or two of those a week and use it as the basis in TV. They call it the B-roll, you know, use it as the basis for something, dig a little deeper, do some research, make some phone calls. You know, it's something that would pique your curiosity. But I knew that this was somebody trying to hustle something. Now, according to this New York Times piece, they went out and they interviewed TV stations around the country that have run these news reports from the Defense Department, talking about how wonderful it is that women in Afghanistan now are not wearing the burqa, which is not true, by the way. From Iraq, about the good news in Iraq. From the No Child Left Behinds. I mean, we've got 20 different federal agencies now that are cranking these things out, as you said, $250 million. And they go back and they interview these people in these TV newsrooms, and they're getting these feeds from the networks. They're getting them from CNN. They're getting them from Fox. They're coming down off the satellite the same way that this program is distributed to our radio stations. And they have no idea. There's nothing tagged on them. It doesn't show up in the mail with a news release only, you know, printed on it like it used to back in the old days, back when I started 30-some-odd years ago. This is mind-boggling, John. First of all, isn't this against the law?
Well, I think, indeed, the FCC needs to investigate. And in the New York Times, the reporters talked with a couple of attorneys who said, yes, that the 2000 decision by the FCC stated, quote, listeners and viewers are entitled to know by whom they are being persuaded. So, yes, there is an enforcement, an urgent enforcement need here for the FCC. These video news releases have been coming by the thousands for 20 years now, and the FCC has sat on its hands.
But usually they've been from corporations. Yeah. I mean, you say for 20 years they've been coming, but they come from corporations, and you pretty much know. Oh, here's the new thing on the golden rice from Monsanto, you know.
Actually, Tom, they've been coming from government for a couple decades too.
Really,
I think what's happened here is the Bush administration. And we know how PR savvy they are, has taken it to a new level.
They've elevated it to an art form.
But most of them do come from corporations. And what's happened, as you say, is that the major networks are incorporating them into their feeds. So there's a certain plausible deniability at the local station level. They can say, well, gee, I thought CBS produced it because I downloaded it from our satellite.
Well, in many cases, apparently they do. They do believe that.
Well, I think you've got to really question that, too, because when you see, if you're a professional journalist and you see a story that has a bias in it, touting a product or touting a point of view, you've got to suspect that it's a video news release. So I think they protest a little too much here.
Yeah.
This is such a lucrative thing for the local TV stations to be able to fire journalists and take feeds from corporate government VNRs and take feeds from their networks. I think there's a question as to really how legitimate it is for them to say, gee, I had no idea this was a video news release. When you're familiar with these things, you can smell them out.
Yeah, I can guarantee you right up until 78, which is when I stopped working in radio until I came back 3 years ago, the radio station that I was working at in Michigan, we had four people in the newsroom. I mean, yeah. Four people in a local. I would be surprised if there's one there now.
Yeah, I would too, because what they can do now is they can take stories provided by whomever and just splice them up and call it news and air it. So
yeah.
Look at the money they're saving. They're filling the news hole with free material.
Right, and real news gets pushed to the side. That's probably the biggest and the most outrageous part of this. Yeah. Now, the Smith-Mundt Act, as I recall, of, what was it, 1948 or something like that, wasn't there a law that was passed that said that it's illegal for it? And this had to do with Voice of America, but basically it's illegal to lobby or to propagandize the American people, number one. And secondly, my recollection is, and I don't have this right in front of me, but is that ever since either 1951 or 1961, every spending appropriation that has been passed by the House of Representatives has had a rider, a sentence attached to the beginning or end of it, which says that none of the money for this bill shall be used for propaganda purposes within the United States. Is that not correct?
Well, that's my understanding. And in fact, it even goes back to the early part of the 20th century.
Right, people reacted to Woodrow Wilson.
Exactly. The biggest government propaganda campaign of its day was the campaign to get America involved in World War I. And
right.
When the public and politicians found out about that in the 20s, they were incensed. In fact, one reason why the U.S. didn't get into the League of Nations was that the public and political leaders were so angry.
Right, they had lost their trust in Woodrow Wilson. We've only got about 10 seconds left here, John. What can people do? How can they find out more? PRWatch.org, I'm assuming, is a resource on this. What else would you suggest people do?
Absolutely, but I think people need to pick up the phone, call the FCC, work with groups like ours and freepress.net, and we need to build a movement to make sure that if these things are going to be used, and they are being used, that they be clearly labeled by who paid for them and who provided them. And we should get the government out of propaganda completely.
There you go. And call your member of Congress. The number for Congress, area code 202-224-3121. It'll get you any, you can ask for any member of Congress, the House or the Senate. John Stauber, PRWatch.org. Thanks so much for being with us, John.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Exposing the Con in conservative.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
In a pickle, how many hairs in a hair? How many waves in the ocean? How many crumbs in bread? But last but not least, baby, most of all, why do I mumble every time you call?
Welcome back. At least 20 federal agencies, including the Defense Department and the Census Bureau, hundreds of television news segments in the past 4 years, $250 million of your and my tax dollars have been spent to produce these so-called video news releases. I mean, this is mind-boggling. And of course, they never talk about mismanagement, waste, controversy, anything negative for the administration. They've been broadcast in the nation's largest television networks, markets including New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Dallas, and Atlanta. This is an article and an excellent bit of investigative reporting by David Barstow and Robin Stein in yesterday's New York Times. In fact, let me just, the first three paragraphs just tells it all. It's the kind of TV news coverage every president covets. Thank you, Bush. Thank you, USA. A jubilant Iraqi American told a camera crew in Kansas City for a segment about reaction to the fall of Baghdad. A second report told of another success in the Bush administration's drive to strengthen aviation security. The reporter called it one of the most remarkable campaigns in aviation history. A third segment, broadcast in January, described the administration's determination to open markets for American farmers. To a viewer, each report looked like any other 90-second segment in the local news. In fact, the federal government produced all three. The report from Kansas City was made by the State Department. The reporter covering airport security was actually a PR professional working under a false name for the Transportation Safety Administration. And the farming segment was done by the Agriculture Department's Office of Communications. Do you get this? It's like in the Soviet Union. They said, okay, here's the news that the people are going to hear. And they had Pravda and TASS. And TASS was the official news agency of the government. Pravda was theoretically an independent newspaper. It's still in business and doing actually some decent reporting these days. And Izvestia was the other news service. Izvestia means news. Pravda means truth. The old joke in the Soviet Union back in the old days was there's no Izvestia and Pravda, no Pravda and Izvestia. Well, it seems like we're there. And a large part of the reason, in my opinion, is this drive for profit in news. We used to say news was sacrosanct. There's a reason why you can get the newspaper. I get a newspaper from another city. Okay, it comes to me cheap. Why? Because ever since 1787, ever since this country was essentially founded, the Constitution was put together, ever since 1787, our government has subsidized the mailing of magazines and newspapers. There's a special rate for them. They are very cheap. In fact, in the first 100 years of our country, we subsidized the cost of paper, newsprint. Why? Because we knew that without an informed publication, an informed populace, you can't have democracy. And we're going in the exact opposite direction, the exact opposite direction. And it is in part the drive for corporate profits, corporate news divisions, laying off reporters. The government comes along and says, here's some free news. Oh, boy, great. I don't have to hire a reporter. We'll just take this news. I mean, it's the way the right wing radio has been taking stuff from the right wing think tanks all these years. You know, it's not all that different. In three separate opinions in the past year, notes the New York Times, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, an investigative arm of Congress, has held that government-made news segments may constitute improper covert propaganda. Friday, however, the Justice Department and the OMB circulated a memorandum instructing all executive branch agencies, that's all, everybody under the president, to ignore the GAO findings. To ignore them. This might be a crime. Ignore it. Just keep on doing what you're doing. This is mind-boggling. MediaLink distributes these things to 130 affiliates through its video feed service Fox News Edge. CNN distributes to 750 stations, similar feed. The AP Television News, Global Video Wire. Our tax dollars for propaganda, 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, welcome back.
Gonna get a break. It's time I breathe. Cause I can't get a break. Doing things my way.
Hey, you're not gonna get a break with this bankruptcy bill. If you have a senator who was one of the folks who voted for this thing, and you would like to call their office and find out what they have to say for themselves and let us know, I'd love to hear from you. I would love to hear from you. In just a minute, I will give the phone number for the United States Capitol, where you can simply call and ask for your senator. So if we have listeners in any of the following states and you would like to simply call the office of your senator, I called Jim Jeffords this morning And I got sort of an explanation. It didn't satisfy me, but they tried to explain it. And I'll give you the details of that later in the program. But anyhow, here's the spineless 18. If you, one of these Democratic senators is yours, give them a call. Ask them why they voted for the bankruptcy bill. And then call us and let us know. I'd love to hear what these people have to say. Max Baucus of Montana. Evan Bay of Indiana. Joe Biden of Delaware. Jeff Bingaman of New Mexico. Robert Byrd of West Virginia. Thomas Carper of Delaware. Kent Conrad of North Dakota. Daniel Inouye of Hawaii. Tim Johnson of South Dakota. Herb Cole of Washington, of Wisconsin, excuse me. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. Bill Nelson of Florida. Ben Nelson of Nebraska. Mark Pryor of Arkansas. Harry Reid of Nevada, the minority leader of the Senate. You would think he would know better. And Ken Salazar of Colorado and Debbie Stabenow of Michigan. If one of these folks is your member of the United States Senate, give them a call at area code 202-224-3121. Ask to talk to somebody in their office who can explain to you why your senator voted for the bankruptcy bill. And if you can get a decent answer, a decent reason, I'd love to hear it. As I said to Eric in Senator Jeffords' office this morning, maybe I'm just uninformed. Maybe there's something I'm missing here. But it seems to me like this bill is basically designed to help the credit card companies and the big banks and screw everybody else. And there's a huge loophole in it, asset protection trust, for the Ken Lays of the world. If you're a millionaire or a billionaire, you can use bankruptcy. I mean, Donald Trump is in bankruptcy right now. You realize this. At least one of his businesses is. It's in bankruptcy right now. Does he look like he's losing everything? There's a little different set of bankruptcy rules for the very rich than there is for you and me. I'd like to know why these senators voted the way they did. Jim Jeffords, at least, you know, if nothing else, his excuse could be that he used to be a Republican. Although I have to say, he's the only Republican I have ever voted for. Back in 64, when I worked for Barry Goldwater, I was too young to vote. Young and dumb. I was 13. But I would have voted for him if I could have. What can I say? 3 years later, I was out in anti-war protests getting gassed by the police. So anyhow, that's a whole other story. Here we are back. Let's get back to this. This is not a conservative or liberal issue, in my opinion. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is a survival of democracy issue. The explanation, says the New York Times, begins in the White House, where the president's communications advisors devised a strategy after September 11, 2001, to encourage supportive news of the fight against terrorism. They go on to note in the New York Times article here, this brilliant bit of investigative reporting, the last little bastion of it in America, I'd say, well, there's a few, but David Barstow and Robin Stein. An important instrument of this strategy was the Office of Broadcast Services. You ever heard of this thing? The Office of Broadcast Services? Sounds like something that Goebbels would run, right? A State Department unit of 30, in fact, Goebbels' comment to Hitler about 3 weeks after the Reichstag fire, he said, "The press is now at our disposal. We cannot be stopped." An important instrument of the strategy was the Office of Broadcasting Services, a State Department unit of 30 or so editors and technicians whose typical duties include distributing video from news conferences. And then there's another one. A senior department official, Patricia Harrison, told Congress last year the Bush administration has come to regard such good news segments as, quote, powerful strategic tools, end quote, for influencing public opinion. Is this healthy for democracy? The Army is doing this now. This is also from the New York Times. Army public affairs specialists equipped with portable satellite transmitters are roaming war zones in Afghanistan and Iraq, beaming news reports, raw video, and interviews to TV stations in the United States. All a local news director has to do is log on to a military finance, that's your tax dollars and mine, website, dvidshub.net. DVIDSHUB.net, browse a menu of segments, and request a free satellite feed. Then there's the Army and Air Force Hometown News Service, a unit of 40 reporters and producers paid for with your tax dollars in mind, set up to send local stations news segments highlighting the accomplishments of military members. Larry Gilman, the unit's deputy director, says, "We're the good news people." Last year, they reached 41 million households in the United States. Gee, what a surprise. People think the war is going better than it is. I wonder why. Last month, we had more Americans die in Iraq than any other month in the history of this war, and yet the average American thinks everything's going wonderfully. Could it have something to do with this? Few stations acknowledge the military's role in the segments, notes the Times. They don't, the reporters don't identify themselves with their title. They don't say, this is Corporal so-and-so, or this is Sergeant so-and-so reporting. No. In fact, Gilman said, we knew if we put rank on there, they're not going to put it on the air. Incredible. 1-866-889-8895. I got more on this. 8894, a telephone number. TomHartmann.com, by the way, the website. You want to drop into our chat room. Let's take a few phone calls here. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Sorry to change the topics on you a little bit here, but in Saturday in the Register, this past Saturday in the World section, page 28, they have an article about the new law in Britain suspending the writ of habeas corpus.
Right, but it's very specific. They did it the same way that they did with Napoleon in 1815, where they passed a specific law that even named Napoleon in the law. And this is not like the Patriot Act. It's in the same direction. And all of England is very upset about it. But it specifically identifies these specific people, or at least that's my understanding of it.
With the exception of Tom, when they identify Tom Hartman.
Yeah, well, see, that's the
point. Or Ed from California.
That's the point. I see, that's our Patriot Act. Our Patriot Act is absolutely sweeping. And according to Alberto Gonzalez, they can take Ed in California, they can take Tom Hartman here on the radio, and lock us up and provide no reason, give us no access to lawyers, give us no access to our family, put us in Guantanamo Bay in our concentration camp. We're now building our sixth concentration camp down there. They can stick us down there forever, according to them. In England, the law that they just passed says, my understanding of it, and I may be wrong on this, because I haven't read the law, I've only read the BBC reporting on it. The law says that they can only lock up these particular, like a half a dozen guys that they've got or something like that, where they're naming these people. They're not. It's not a sweeping elimination of habeas corpus. But
I don't see that in the article. And, of course, it was on page 28.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't see that. It says it can be either Britons or foreigners.
Well, maybe I've got it wrong. Go to news.bbc.co.uk and check it out. And I'll get more information.
If my computer was working, I would go there.
Okay, well, I'll report back on it. What I'm telling you may be wrong, so let me find out more.
What I'm telling you may be wrong, too, but I just thought it was terrible.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree. Anytime we lose habeas corpus, we have lost something really critical. Julie, Ed, thanks for the call, by the way. Julie from Humboldt County, California. Hey, Julie.
Hi, I was listening to your earlier guest speaking about the media,
right, John Stauber.
And I find the environment that we live in today, especially in regards to the media, to be really scary. I feel like I'm living in, like, Nazi Germany.
Or 1984.
Propaganda machine. Or, yeah, I can name scenarios of, like, science fiction that describe how I feel about the world I live in today. And mostly because I feel that the media has no allegiance to we the people.
Oh, they have an allegiance to the dollar, to the bottom line. That's the first. I mean, this is the corporatization of news. I mean, historically, right, under the antitrust laws, if nothing else, and certainly under FCC regulations, although that didn't come along until the late 1930s, but under the antitrust laws, historically, a company was allowed to do basically one thing, and it couldn't monopolize a market.
Right.
Since Reagan, all the rules have changed.
Another aspect of this that I find frightening and intriguing, I've been seeing a lot on the internet, which I kind of started to boycott the mass media as much as possible and get most of my information as I can from, you know, Common Dreams and some of the other organizations that draw news articles together in certain topics. Anyway, a lot of what I've been seeing is this assassination of media who try to get out the truth, and I'm finding it like that's the level of fear that feels to me like what's behind and driving.
Well, that's the big thing. I mean, this group Accuracy in Media that was started by the right wing back 15 years ago and just started relentlessly pounding on the mainstream press so that they got hysterically paranoid about reporting even the truth.
I feel that way myself.
And yeah, it's just not a good thing. Julie, thanks for the call and for pointing it out. I share your feelings. The media in the United States right now is a mess. And if we don't get involved in it, we don't do something about it, it's going to simply get worse. 1-866-889-8894. Kevin, trucker on the road in Missouri. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
All right, how are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, I just had a question for you. To be quite honest, I'm a rarity that slipped over from the Rarity Channel just trying to cross-educate myself and get a little bit of information from both sides. And the story that you had this morning about the news feeds coming down from the Bush administration and your other guests said that for basically 20 years this has been happening.
That's right.
Through the government. Pick up a little statistics. Find out what the Clinton administration did in comparison to the Bush administration.
Well, as best I can tell, the Clinton administration spent about $10 million on this. The Bush administration spent $258 million just in the last year.
Wow, that is an incredible.
It's a bit of a difference.
Amount.
It's a bit of a difference. As John Stauber said, you know, this has been going on for a long time, but it's been mostly small potatoes stuff. And the Bush administration has turned it into an art form. And I would be outraged if it was a Democrat in office. This is not Democratic or Republican. You cannot have a democracy without an informed populace. And when the government becomes the source of information about the government, you have a problem.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. That's one reason why I'm channel jumping. You know, you can't listen to one side and get everything. You got to educate yourself on both
yep.
policies.
Yep,
so.
I agree.
Anyways.
Thank you,
Tom. I appreciate you having me.
Sure enough. Thanks for calling, Kevin. I appreciate it. And you know, I have said all along, I don't think right-wing talk radio should go away. I just think there should be more left-wing talk radio to balance it. I mean, I agree with you, Kevin. We need all voices heard here in America. That's what democracy is all about. Max is on the road. Hey, Max, where are you? Where are you located?
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Max. Thank you.
Thank you for educating us.
Well.
Last night I was in a restaurant over by Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And because I get laid over once in a while, and I went into... went in there, and of course, you know, the trucking industry is full of Republicans and such, you know, and they're always talking about politics, you know.
Yeah.
And he called me a liberal,
mm-hmm.
a sorry-ass liberal, I guess that's what he called me.
Yeah.
And we're sick and tired of you sorry liberals and this, that, and... Well, you know, I thought, well, you know, why don't you repeat some of the things that Tom Hartman said? You know,
mm-hmm.
Well, we started talking, and I beat him down, Tom.
In other
I
words,
beat him down.
He didn't have an argument. He just had names to call you.
Yeah, I beat him down.
Well, good on you, Max.
And at the end of the conversation, when it was all said and done, the only thing that they had left is, hey, okay, you know, you got all this to talk about. They said, are you a vet? Yes, I am. Matter of fact. I served my country. They didn't say another word to me. That was the end of it.
Yeah. Well, Max, I think I salute you on that. And we need to take it to the next step because the other side, the right wing, have been playing this game of, you know, let's beat them down and crush them and vilify them. And, you know, liberals or progressives or even Democrats are traitors and they're treasonous.
Oh,
and,
that was
you know,
terrible.
Hate, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think not only do we need to point out to them where they're wrong, but then we also need to bring them into the fold. You know,
that's what,
bring
that's
them around.
That's what I did.
Make
I brought them into the wasteful money and the wasteful spending and the men and women that are walking around the United States with an $8.50 an hour job or a $6.50 an hour job that don't have medical and when our military or our government doesn't have to account for $9 billion that.
Yeah.
Somebody somewhere, some along
that Halliburton along seems to have lost. Yeah, exactly.
So you can imagine what you can do with that $9 billion.
I know. It's amazing, Max. Max, I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. And good to hear from you. And this is just, you know, the right wing is always going to try and divide us. I think we really need to, it's a liberal thing to say, I guess, but I think we need to unite us. Tom in Minneapolis on the line. Hey, Tom.
Morning, Tom. Hey, real quick here, just regarding the free press and history and all that, and I want to give you two quotes here and then relate it to an example like today.
Okay, we got about 45 seconds.
Okay, I can do that. Real quick, of course, the well-known one by Santayana, those who don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it.
That's right.
And then the one by Orwell, who says, who controls the past controls the future.
Mm-hmm.
Who controls the present controls the past. And you mentioned in one of your op-eds how on the WhiteHouse.org page, they put Jefferson and all these Democratic Republicans as Republicans.
Right. WhiteHouse.gov, actually. It's the official website. Yeah. Yeah. James Madison is now a Republican. The Republican Party was founded in 1840. James Madison was president from 1808 to 14 or something. Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. You're absolutely right. Tom, thanks for the call. Good point. Well said. 10 minutes before the hour. Truth in broadcasting. What a radical idea that is. This is Tom Hartman with you.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Angry faces, cursing loud.
You don't see much of that in government news reports. And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And it's not just the United States. Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing the same thing in California. He's distributing these phony news releases. He's got the Democrats all upset out there. And Schwarzenegger is saying, hey, George W. can do it. I can do it. Right. Rachel in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Rachel, what do you think of this?
Hello, Tom. This is Rachel in Santa Fe listening on KRSN Los Alamos.
That's great. Hey, Rachel.
As you know, our Senator Jeff Bingaman, who is a Democrat and he voted in favor of the bankruptcy reform law.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get an interesting explanation from his receptionist, which is that the law creates a means test which determines whether or not a person is basically trying to commit fraud.
Yes, if you spend more than $43 a week on a credit card in the month prior to declaring bankruptcy, you can be prosecuted for fraud.
Well, apparently the law can potentially extend beyond that very liberal means test, but anyway, she made it sound like that was really the biggest positive part of this legislation.
That's nonsense, because there's already fraud laws, Rachel. It's already against the law to commit credit card fraud. People are prosecuted for it every day. If you run up bills on a credit card just to declare bankruptcy, and they can prove it, and it's not that hard to prove, you go to jail.
So are you saying that people who are guilty of this kind of fraud are really available for prosecution?
Yes, and they are prosecuted every day in the United States. Yes, credit card fraud is one of the more common crimes that are prosecuted in the United States.
So you're saying that this little means test is kind of just a bogus issue?
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure
thanks.
Like your show.
Thank you, Rachel, and I appreciate your calling Bingaman's office. It's you might call him back. And see, the means test is $43 a week. If you spend $43 a week on a credit card in the month before, say you're paying for food with your credit card, in the month before you declare bankruptcy, then they can say, oh, you've committed fraud, and they can prosecute you as well as get all the money back. I mean, this is just outrageous to me.
So you're not really bad.
Yeah, it's outrageous. Rachel, thanks for getting on top of it. I really respect you for calling your member of the United States Senate there in New Mexico. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or even the DNC.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
We'll be right back.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America, of the world. We really do live in an interdependent world here, you know. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you for another year. Yes, for another year as well. For another hour of fun, frivolity, fascinating details, interesting news. All sorts of things you might never have considered, or maybe you were just unwilling to say out loud, but I'll do it for you. David Swanson is with us regularly on Mondays. David is with Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. And hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great. I want to get to talking with you about there's a nursing issue, a labor issue. We've got the labor's take on the war, a couple of these things. I've also got a couple of phone calls stacked up from the previous hour. And so how about you and I hang out together here for a minute, and we'll take these phone calls, and I'll let you toss your two cents in, too, if you have anything to say on them. Is that all right with you?
Sounds great.
Okay, hang on here. Let's see. Logan in New York City on the line. Hey, Logan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to know whether you read the Hitchens article about the Ohio vote.
When was it published?
It was published in Vanity Fair a couple of weeks ago. Not surprisingly, Drudge Report, though they have a link to Hitchens, did not run it. But it's an interesting article, given that he wasn't a Kerry supporter. I think.
Oh yeah, okay. This is the article where he basically says that there was vote fraud. He doesn't go so far as to say that the machines were hacked or anything like that, but the fact that there were too many machines, there are lots of machines in the Republican white bread communities and very few machines in the inner cities and all of the machinations or however it's pronounced that Ken Blackwell went through, that kind of stuff. That was
how they were all in favor of Bush. And then the other thing was the Help America Vote Act. Isn't it just basically a call to convert everything to electronic voting? I mean,
by and large, yeah. It sets aside either $3.4 or $4.3 billion for the states, federal money that's given to the states that they can then use to buy voting machines from private corporations who are Republican affiliated.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like they're still trying to implement that. So isn't that going to kind of stand in the way of Barbara Boxer and Clinton's little bill there?
We'll see. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Good to hear from you, Logan. I appreciate it. Thoughts on that, David Swanson?
Yeah, I did see the article, and it was good to see Vanity Fair do what the New York Times and the Washington Post still won't and treat these issues seriously, but
it should be done.
It is very much worth taking seriously, and we need a full investigation of what happened in Ohio and some of the other states.
Yeah, Louise and I watched 60 Minutes last night, and it just breaks my heart to watch these so-called news programs. And I remember when 60 Minutes, when I was a kid. Back when I was a kid, David, I got to tell you, 60 Minutes actually broke news.
I remember.
I mean, it was like the high point of the week to watch 60 Minutes. Who, you know, in fact, there was the old saying, you know it's going to be a bad day when, right, and when the 60 Minutes film crew is outside your office, or outside your home in the morning. That was, they were this, everybody was terrified of them. And now they do these fluff pieces. These fluff pieces where if they start to take on a topic, they get a third of the way down the road, and then they just kind of stop. They don't go any farther.
I think it was 2020 recently. I saw, I flipped it on and saw a story on what kind of expensive cars celebrities are buying.
This is serious.
What is that?
Serious news. Jim in Missouri is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Kind of a two-part question, Tom. How are you doing?
Good.
First part's about FMLA, and then it kind of goes on into bankruptcy.
Okay.
Well, my mother-in-law, she works, I won't say the name, but she works at a lawnmower engine factory in Arbor Bluff, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And, up north in Wisconsin, where they're from, they're union. Now, down there in southern Missouri, they're not.
Right.
And they've, over the past 15 years they've been there, finally, you know, they've decided, well, hey, we can treat these people like crap. And, it just kind of progressed on to where they treat them worse and worse. And, but now she got FMLA on my wife's grandma. And
educate me, Jim. What's FMLA?
FMLA. It's a Family Medical Leave Act. It's Clinton started. It's, you know,
right.
You can,
they've got to give you time off for disasters in the family kind of thing.
She's the grandmother is, she's got emphysema and a few things. And, you know, she's not off with her every day. But she'll miss it probably at least once a week.
Yeah.
Work with her.
Yeah.
And, now they're wanting her to, okay, you're supposed to be able to get a doctor's note, you know, that you started up, you get the doctor deal, and then all you got to do after that is just,
right,
you know, hey, I had to stay home today. Well, now they're wanting her to have to go to the doctor every single time she misses.
Yeah.
So she misses,
They're making life difficult for her. Is there a question, Jim, or did you just want to point this out to us?
I wanted to ask you, is that right to do? And then after that question, I got, she's kind of got wore down over doing this. She's going to have to, the grandma's getting worse, she's going to have to quit her job, and she thinks she's probably going to end up having to file bankruptcy. Is the quitting the job going to keep her from filing bankruptcy?
Oh, my goodness.
And is, something about median income. If you don't meet the median income,
yeah, that's the new bankruptcy bill. Is this means testing thing? If you're not truly profoundly deeply poverty stricken poor, then you're going to have to pay off. You can't declare Chapter 7 bankruptcy. You have to go to Chapter 13 reorganization, and you're going to have to pay this stuff off. David, you're the expert on this stuff. What are your thoughts on the situation there that Jim has? You know, with regard to his relations, Paul.
Well, I don't know if I am the expert, but I do think that he already understands the big solution that's needed is to get a union. Because if they are going too far in demanding too much documentation and hassling her too much, a union can address that, and an individual has a hard time doing so.
Yeah, is Missouri a right to work state? So called, do you know?
I don't think it is.
Yeah, I should have. I just dropped Jim. I should have kept him on there. I'm sorry, Jim.
Oh.
This is an example, Jim. I'm sorry that we can't give you instant answers. This is, you know, it's not so much a, you know, help your economy show, but or economic show, but what Jim has raised, David, is an excellent and brilliant example of what's wrong with our economic and political systems in the United States. They're increasingly stacked to screw the middle class, and of course, if you're incredibly wealthy, if you're a millionaire or billionaire, you can have an asset protection trust, and you can declare bankruptcy and keep your money. I mean, Donald Trump is in bankruptcy right now, right? Or one of his, you know, his casino is, and he doesn't seem to be hurting, to the best of my knowledge.
No, you can.
In fact, he's on TV.
You can stash away tons of money if you're a corporation or you're extremely wealthy or you're the Bush administration. You can go way into debt and be fine.
Yeah, yeah. David, quickly, we've got a few other calls here too we should get to, but tell me about Labor's position on the war in Iraq. I was interested to see this kind of hit piece on MoveOn.org by, I believe it was Norman Solomon, I may be wrong, on CommonDreams.org over the weekend, and although I think it was published first someplace else, like The Nation. And it was like, you know, gee, they're not against the war. They're not really progressive sort of kind of, you know, thing. What's labor doing with regard to the war in Iraq?
Well, Norman's concern there is that, you know, Move On quadrupled their number of supporters by opposing the war. That was how they grew into a major force. And they now say, well, we won't oppose the war if there's any sort of controversy, if our members aren't really 100% for it. Yet they were willing to back a presidential candidate in the primaries if they could get 50% plus one. And so there's a little bit of hypocrisy. And you can see the same thing in the labor movement. The AFL-CIO is unwilling to step out against the war unless there's universal support among its members. And there's the closest to it there's ever been. I mean, there's unprecedented opposition to the war from unions. We haven't seen this before. We've seen, for the past 50 years, labor backing wars. And we saw a great, this before my time, you can tell me about it, but we saw a split on the left between labor and anti-war activists in Vietnam.
Right.
Now we have...
Well, that's one of the reasons for that, by the way, was because labor was profiting from the war. General Motors was making tanks like crazy, and those were all unionized jobs that were making those war machines.
Right, and it's still an element of that to it, but we have this grassroots organization, U.S. Labor Against the War, and you can go to uslaboragainstwar.org, and many of the biggest international unions have passed resolutions demanding an immediate end to the war. This is the SEIU, the CWA, the AFSCME, the postal workers, the longshore workers, Unite, UE, etc., and many of the state federations, including California, many of the constituency groups. We have over half of U.S. union members' organizations officially against the war, and yet we can't get the AFL to take action, and so there's a push to make that happen in July at the AFL-CIO convention. But in the meantime, labor is active and will be a part of the huge rallies next weekend, marking the 2-year anniversary of the Shock and Awe campaign.
Right. Tell us about these rallies and where people can learn more about them.
Well, one place, of course, is pdamerica.org, which you mentioned. Another is United for Peace and Justice. They have a website. U.S. Law, U.S. Labor Against the War has a website. But there will be huge rallies on the 19th all over the country. You can start one in your town. A huge one will be in Fayetteville, North Carolina, near Fort Bragg, and will involve numerous veterans and military families. And this is not about do we support the troops or oppose the troops? We're working with the troops. The troops are us, and many are refusing to fight.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, the only county in the United States that I have seen a report on the military vote, the absentee vote from overseas, the military vote, was one county in Ohio where it kind of slipped out, and it was 2-1 in favor of John Kerry.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You have what Henry David Thoreau described of troops marching off to war, all of them against it, obeying the law.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite remarkable. PD America, Progressive Democrats of America, are getting very active in this. And do you see? We got about 30 seconds, David. Do you see the AFL-CIO coming through this thing? Okay, this meeting this summer. I know this is a real transitional time for the AFL, it seems to me.
Yeah, and this split and this infighting is part of why they can't take a controversial stand on something. I don't know. I don't want to put my money down anywhere on that, but I do want to quickly say, call your Congress member. There's a vote in the House tomorrow on another $82 billion for this illegal war. Go to pdamerica.org and call your Congress member.
Yeah, okay, and the numbers for members of Congress are 202-224-3121. We'll get you any member of Congress. David Swanson, pdamerica.org, Progressive Democrats of America. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I do appreciate it. Good talking with you. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour, here where you will get your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on?
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Is it going to be the workers?
Which side are you on, boys?
Or the owners?
Which side are
increasingly, our society stratified. I have some really startling statistical and scientific, shall we say, information for you. We'll share with you in a few minutes. But first, it's time for our daily report from the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen Ratner in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi. The White House is sticking to their guns on this issue of video news releases. As you know, there was a New York Times front page article about this yesterday.
I ranted about it for an hour today. Why don't they just rename it TASS? The official news.
Well, it's
service.
Interesting. I often sit next to the TASS reporter.
Oh, really?
at the White House briefings. And I often ask him what the difference is between – we ought to have him on sometime.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite a character. He was actually there from Soviet days and hasn't ever really left. And I often ask him, well, what's the difference between, you know, what happens at the White House, et cetera. He said, well – he said that actually, if you get in much more trouble if you don't sort of toe the party line in Russia, and that in fact foreign journalists have much more access at the White House than foreign journalists do in Russia to the Kremlin. But he said, you know, basically, there's not.
When
you
the
government Russian news is government news is government news.
There you go. Yeah, it's like, you know, sausage. It's. Yeah, anyhow, yeah, okay. So that so the Bush administration is saying, hey, we're going to make up the news, we're going to feed it to radio and TV stations, and if you don't like it, tough, you won't know, because
right.
you can't tell the difference.
And the fact is that you know as well as I know, is that news organizations, and particularly with television, not so much with radio, it's very expensive to go out with a camera, edit, et cetera, news, and if they can get some, you know, footage, and even if it's voiced for them so they don't have to write it, they're going to use it.
$258 million of our tax dollars the Bush administration has spent on feeding phony news
now,
to TV stations.
Now, if you do the math and you figure out that each person is each what we average in terms of per-person taxes in this country is around $5,000 a person.
Mm-hmm.
That pretty much what figures to be about 500,000 people would be paying for that.
Wow.
That's 500,000 people working a full year to pay for that.
Yeah.
that's you know, the size of the state of Vermont. The whole state of Vermont is paying for your PR.
I knew we were doing something here. I didn't know it was that. I thought we were just raising cows,
you know,
maple syrup.
I always like to put things down into bottom line taxpayers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It would be interesting to do the division on, you know, just what was your share of that, what was my share of that, you know, how much. And now here also it's going on in California. Schwarzenegger is doing the same thing. Do you know of any other states where the governors of the states are creating phony news? And
the problem is that in most states they just don't have the finances to do something like that. I mean, you know, you have to get a television studio, you have to pay a couple people. I mean, you're talking about somewhere between $200,000 and $500,000 a year to even do something pretty minimal.
Well, they don't have the finances, or they don't have the audacity.
Right. Well, I do think they probably have the audacity. I don't think governors are short on that. I think they don't have finance. And the state of California, what, it's the sixth or seventh largest economy in the world.
It's the sixth largest.
Yeah, they've got it.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if this is coming out of Florida and the story just hasn't broken yet, if Jeb is, you know, following and its brothers are.
But what's interesting, of course, there is a law in the book. This is why Voice of America cannot run their programs within the United States, because you're not allowed to propagandize against
war
citizens.
Yeah, the Smith-Month Act of 48.
That's right.
And there's laws that go back to the 20s, in fact, against this, and plus all the appropriations bill. But the president says he's going to do it, huh? He's going to stay
with
it.
White House said they're continuing to follow their legal counsel on that. That's what they said this morning.
Good old Alberto. He knows everything. Ellen,
That's
thanks
right.
so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. In our chat room, a discussion going on about why did Saddam lie to us about the weapons of mass destruction. If you go back and read the news reports, you will discover that Saddam was saying that he didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. That's what he said. He said, there's nothing here. We don't have any. His, I forget the guy's name. It wasn't Tariq Aziz, who also was saying, we have no weapons of mass destruction. But he had Baghdad Bob, his spokesman, saying there's no weapons of mass destruction. You're welcome to look. We sent the inspectors over. They were unfettered. They went all over the country. And then when the UN said we want proof that you destroyed them, they provided 14,000 pages of documents. The United States went through and took between 5,000 and 6,000 of those pages and blacklined them out, redacted them, eliminated them, because they made reference to specific American contractors that had provided Iraq with weapons of mass destruction back in the 80s when Saddam was our friend, and then provided them to the UN. And, you know, Saddam all along was saying, I got nothing here. I'm no danger to you guys. In fact, in the last couple of weeks before we attacked him, he even said, hey, I'll even sell you oil. I'll make a deal for you. He was getting rather freaked out, I think. So just to set the record straight. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Alice.
It's a great time for you to have your radio program.
I agree.
You will never run low on material with these goons in office.
You're absolutely right, Alice.
We invade countries that did nothing to provoke us.
Yep.
Then we call them insurgents and torture them.
Yeah.
We have some strange folks in our White House.
We do.
They lie to us about everything.
Yep.
Recently, they lost $9 billion. I suggest they check their pockets.
Yes. Have a little conversation with Paul Bremer about that, or with Dick Cheney. You know, it's
yeah.
Well,
you wouldn't get any answer.
Yeah. Well,
they lie to you.
It's really the Pentagon cumulatively over the last 20 or so years has lost $1 trillion.
Yeah.
So that's still unaccounted for. So go figure, Alice. I mean, it's
money doesn't mean anything to them.
Apparently not. As Everett Dirksen famously said, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking real money. Well, the $9 million is real money. So that was your point, Alice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate you making it.
It's always, have a good day, Tom.
Thank you. Always wonderful to hear from you, Alice.
Okay.
Keep listening and keep up the great work you're doing there in Humboldt County and sharing the word. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. I have a question, a comment about the Times piece, and some good news about contacting your U.S. congressman or senator.
Okay.
The question is, what's the best site to find out how much money corporations have contributed to candidates for federal office?
PublicCitizen.org.
Okay. Now, as a Times piece, I could hardly believe my eyes as I read that extraordinary piece.
Yeah.
I mean, this is fuel for high-octane brains.
This is Viagra for your brain. What's amazing to me is that this has been going on for all these years, and nobody has reported about it before. I mean,
really?
They spent $250 million, and nobody noticed? And they're feeding the media with this stuff, and nobody in the media noticed? I'm just, what boggles me is the level of Soviet-style, Stalinist-style behavior that we have become willing to put up with. There's a story in my stack here. Well, hopefully I'll have a chance to get to it before the third hour is out, about a fellow who showed up for one of Bush's meetings in one of these states. You know, he's running around campaigning for Social Security. And the guy was a Bush supporter. He was a Republican. And he stands up and he says, what about having private accounts? He says, I'm all in favor of private accounts. Let's have them in addition to Social Security rather than instead of. And Bush tries to drown him out. The people are, you know, Bush makes some applause line. Everybody applauds. And then they drag him out. And we have reached the point now where the president is like the bubble boy. He's like one of these kids who can't be exposed to germs. He's traveling wherever he goes. Only syncopants, only people who will say nothing in opposition, even his own, even people on his side are not allowed to question him. This is what Stalin did.
It's mega fascism.
Well, it's
after I got over the shock of seeing what I was reading in this propaganda piece in the Times, it's really the first investigative journalism I've seen in the Times news section in a long, long time. And I was very surprised to see it. And I wondered, how in the world did this even run?
Well, probably.
I just don't get it.
Probably if the news that was being fed to newspapers as well as TV and radio, it wouldn't have run. Well, I don't want to knock the New York Times, but I'm still burned by Judith Miller. Judith Miller.
Well, I think their news content is very weak. The editorial page is interesting, but the news content is very weak and corporate.
Yeah, and
now, the good news.
Okay,
good news that I have for you about contacting your congressman is I've discovered there's a toll-free number.
Yes, there is.
A lot of people don't have a lot of minutes to phone a toll number.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear it?
Sure.
Okay, it's 877-762-8762.
And that's for the switchboard for any member of Congress?
That gets you right to the congressional switchboard, just like the toll number.
Okay.
But, you know, you do a Google search on the congressional switchboard, you can't find the toll-free number anywhere.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'll verify this when I get off the air. I'm assuming you're telling me the truth here, Tim.
As a matter of fact, I just spoke with Stabenow's office,
mm-hmm.
because her name just leaped up at me when I saw she voted for the bankruptcy bill. And I contacted her office, and the person to speak with there about it is Darren Elliott.
And what did he say?
He wouldn't talk to me because I'm a freelance journalist. I shouldn't have told him that, I suppose.
Hmm.
But at any rate, I wish somebody in Michigan would call that toll-free number, ask for Darren Elliott, get an explanation, and then, you know, call your toll-free number.
Yeah, the toll-free number for Congress, 877-762-8762. Tim?
Yes, that's it.
I'm sorry. Tim, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Tim, thanks for the call.
And all those people in Michigan, tag your it.
Yeah, well, there you go. And, in fact, we got one coming right up. Thanks a lot for the call, Tim. Here's Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan. Hey, Alfred.
Yes, Tom, that's extremely interesting because from 1 o'clock on to 1:30, I was trying to get a hold of the local Stabenow office. I kept getting a recording. Then the person said she didn't know, but she'd get the information for me. And I said, can I call directly? I got the Washington 202 number. I called directly there. Oh, before that, I called the local Democratic Party. They were not aware of how she voted. She was supposed to show up, she and the local Republican House of Representative person was supposed to show up at a Social Security meeting last week, and neither one of them showed up. Supposedly she was sick. But I got a hold of the office, talked to a Rachel in D.C. She said, I really don't know. Senator Stabenow has not made up her written statement why she voted for it. And I tried pressing her, and she says, well, I'm fairly new. So, you know...
Did she take your number and information?
I didn't give it to
call
her.
You back?
I don't want, you know, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't give it to her. I called on the 202 number.
Yeah.
But I got jerked around the local, and then the local Democrats didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
And
this isn't just, you know, I'm not trying to pick on Debbie Stabenow. This is a coincidence that two people have called about her. We've had a person call Jeff Bingham in New Mexico. I've got Joe Biden's letter, which says nothing. Evan Bayh in Indiana, he's trying to, you know, be the great moderate guy.
Yeah,
why is he
doing this?
But if
they're going to vote, why don't they have a reason?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And the reason that I got when I talked to Jim Jeffords' office was this guy said, well, we voted for this because the law has a provision in it, this bill has a provision in it, that will put women who are getting child support or alimony first in line to get the money back from people when they can't declare bankruptcy anymore, and so they have to be paying their bills. And I said, that doesn't matter. You know, alimony and child support are court ordered. They're already first in line. In fact, you can't even include alimony and child support in a bankruptcy proceeding because they're court ordered. You
well,
can't Stephanie avoid them.
A little shaky anyway because she voted for our involvement in Iraq.
Yeah.
2 years ago, and she's coming up for re-election, which is surprising that she's coming up next year. Why would she do something that could lose her constituency?
Well, I don't know, and I got to say, I've met Debbie Stabenow, and I think very highly of her.
Well, I haven't for some time. I knew her way back when I was involved in local state politics, and I wasn't too keen. She's a professional politician, and I've come to the conclusion if you spend any amount of time in politics, then the person should be replaced and, like Harry Truman, go home and cut your lawn.
Well, okay. Alfred, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And if you get a straight answer there, you know, call us back and let us know. As I said, I'm not picking on any of these people in general. And I think Debbie Stabenow is a good senator. I really do. And I think that she's done a lot of good for the people of the state of Michigan. I just, you know, I'd be curious to find out why she voted this way. I'm curious to find out why Harry Reid, if one of our Nevada listeners wants to check with him. Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, I thought that she was relatively progressive. Tim Johnson in South Dakota, what's the deal here? Kent Conrad, I mean, some of these folks, Ken Salazar, well, okay, he's a little conservative. But, I mean, this, frankly, I don't think that this is conservative or liberal. The Republicans have gone along with it because the Republicans are professional, take money from corporation folks. What are the Democrats doing in this? They're supposed to be professional. We're on the side of the people, folks. I'm confused. I'd just like to get a straight answer from somebody. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Morning, Tom. I agree with you. This isn't Democratic-Republican issue. This is a morality issue. This is a values issue. And this is not part of my values to screw over the American public. That being said, we had a meeting Saturday night, and the local head honcho of Jeff Bingaman's office was there. And boy, did he get lambasted on this.
Jeff Bingaman, for our listeners, is the senator from New Mexico who voted for the bankruptcy bill.
Right, but he didn't vote for cloture. You know, he was right there at the first, and I thought, hey, we got this right. And the moderator of our group was trying to be diplomatic, and he had a call of hands. How many of y'all are upset about this or what? Have questions about it?
Yeah.
Or disappointed was the word. How many of you all are disappointed? And every hand in the room went up.
Wow.
And then they started to move on, and I sat there and I said, hey, wait a second. I got one other question. How many people in this room are
angry?
I won't use it.
Yeah.
Well, I used that four-letter word for urination off.
There you go, yeah.
And every hand in the room went up. And the head, Terry was his name, he said, well, there's too much fraud out there. And they've been trying to get this string through for 10 years, and this is the best we can do.
We've had laws
like,
against fraud that go back 2 centuries.
Between, you know, do you choose to be stabbed to death with a gunshot? Or do you choose to be executed with a gun or sliced with a bunch of razors?
Well, and the reality is that's no difference. Yeah, it's a straw man argument, Roy, because we've had laws against fraud forever. And the laws against credit card fraud are very strong. And
he's talking about the credit people are in such dire – and I was waiting.
They made $30 billion last year. $30 billion in profits.
And I wanted to add two other quick things. One, in relation to Missouri, that is a right to work for less state.
Yeah.
And thirdly, the old scorpion story about being stung by the scorpion. We had the thrust of the meeting Saturday night was an update on getting voter election reform here in New Mexico.
Good on you.
And the folks that were out there that had just been, you know, if I was doing 50%, these guys were doing 500%.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was going to go. They had all kinds of agreements with the Republicans, and everything was this and that. It wasn't perfect, but it was so good. And I'm damned if the Republicans didn't walk out and spike it. We're getting no election reform in New Mexico.
You're kidding.
Why did they do it? Because they're Republicans.
That's it. That's amazing.
They screwed it.
Absolutely amazing.
They flat screwed it up.
That's amazing.
And
Roy,
all,
go ahead.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm through ranting.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call and thanks for the rant.
I'm not through, but I'm through for time being.
Yeah, time. Yeah, we're running out. Thanks a lot, Roy. Good to hear from you. Oh, my goodness. Freeman in San Diego on the line. Hey, Freeman.
Hey, love your show.
Thank you.
I was curious what your source was for the Bush administration ignoring the GAO's warning.
Yesterday's New York Times.
Oh, darn it. The one I have to pay for.
Actually, no, it's free. If you go to nytimes.com,
mm-hmm.
and you may have to sign up and give them your zip code or something, but it's free to register for it. And it won't be on today's headlines, but if you click most forwarded, most email articles, you know, like click any article, and you'll see a little thing over on the right that says most emailed articles, and it will be at the top of the list today. It was at the top of the list all day yesterday.
Great.
And it's an extraordinary piece. It runs about 6-7 pages long when you print the thing out single-spaced in detail. And all of the quotes that I was reading from that this morning were right from that. It's just they just lay it out.
Cool.
And of course, then Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service was actually in the press conference about 2-3 hours ago in the White House, where Scotty came out and said, "Well, you know, we're going to continue to produce these things. We're going to continue to provide you Americans with the news. We, the government." And whether you're conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, libertarian, green, whatever, when the government starts providing us with news, I think we all need to be worried.
Yeah.
It's time to sit up and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. Freeman, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you.
Keep up the good work.
You too. Pass it along. Tag, you're it. There you go. Pass it along. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice, among other things. But I put reason up high on the list. 10 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of.
And wise, speaking of welcome back, it's 4 minutes before the hour. Jim Jeffords, my senator, has published this statement on the bankruptcy vote on his website, which is jeffords.senate.gov. He says, I believe the full protection of the bankruptcy code should be available to those who need it. However, there's always a but in there, right? However, it seems reasonable that those who are able to repay some of their debts should be expected to do so. I've also maintained that any bankruptcy reform that passes the Senate must protect those individuals who rely on alimony and child support payments, which this bill does. While I am disappointed that some amendments that would have improved this legislation did not pass, I believe this bill achieves the goals I have outlined. That's what he says. And basically, I managed to get his assistant, a very decent and nice guy, Eric, in his office. I think I managed to get him upset. It wasn't my intention, but I just kept going, come on, give me a break. I still don't get it. And we'll see. And, of course, Joe Biden of Delaware, the man who would like to be president, Jonathan Chait, on March 4th, wrote an op-ed piece for the Los Angeles Times, commentary, letter to the editor, whatever it is, called When Democrats Join the Dark Side. They're kowtowing to home state industries props up the Republicans, he says. And then he talks about how, you know, Biden is from Delaware, and Delaware is where so many of the credit card companies are located. He says the law is littered with abuses, like the bankruptcy bill measures the benefit of narrow economic interest at the extent of a broader public good. Most Democrats, like Biden, are smart enough to oppose most of them, but there's always a Democratic senator or two willing to shill for their home state interests in industry's favorite abusive privilege. And, you know, he goes on like that. Well, Joe Biden responds. He says, in his zeal to attack the bankruptcy reform bill, Jonathan Chatt's March 4th commentary, when Democrats join the dark side, mischaracterizes the legislation. He says, at the outset, I refused to support bankruptcy reform until fundamental changes were made. I fought to establish a safe harbor for those below their state's median income. Also insisted on provisions requiring lenders to post a clear warning. He says, this bill establishes unprecedented protections for child support and alimony, making bankruptcy part of the enforcement system for women and children. Why not? We're putting lipstick on a pig here, Joe. Why not just pass a law that says people who owe alimony and child support have to pay it, and if they don't, they get nailed? I mean, come on, we don't need it. This is pathetic. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
This has got to be the most ominous headline I have seen in at least 20 years. And here it was on the inside pages of our local newspaper. That's page 2. It's still the inside. This is the Associated Press, an article by Christopher Bodine. The headline, China's President Tells Army to Be Prepared for War. And I read that, and it just took me back to the Cold War and to my imaginations of what it must have been like. In the 30s, I, of course, was my parents were children at that time. But my imaginations of what it must have been like when the world was reported that Hitler was, you know, saying that Poland had weapons of mass destruction and that they were massing troops on the Polish-German border and that they were massing mustard gas, which they would use against the Germans, and he had to take them out to prevent the threat of weapons of mass destruction against Germans. And the rest of the world as headlines saying things like, you know, Germany's chancellor tells army to be prepared for war. The rest of the world was, shall we say, concerned. Well, here the headline today, China's president tells army to be prepared for war. This, of course, is about Taiwan. China's national legislature today overwhelmingly approved a law authorizing a military attack. This was a unanimous vote of the national legislature in Beijing, their equivalent of our authority to George W. Bush to attack Iraq, even though some Democrats like John Kerry said, well, he didn't really think that Bush would do it. He was just giving him the ability to do it as a bargaining chip. I don't for a minute think that the folks in Beijing who were members of this Congress felt that they were giving Hu Huintao, Hu Huintao, Tao, Xin Tao. Is that how you say it? Xin Tao? I have to ask my brother-in-law. Anyway, I don't think that they thought that they were giving him a bargaining chip. It sure looks to me like China might be preparing for war. This was a day after President Hu Jintao told the 25 million member People's Liberation Army to be prepared for war. He said, "We shall step up preparations for possible military struggle." In 1949, of course, Chiang Kai-shek boogied on out of China. He had tried to take on the Chinese government, the Great Revolution, him and Mao, competitors, as it were. Mao Zedong ended up in charge of China. Chiang ended up in charge of Taiwan, what had previously been called Formosa, a substantially sized island. They have a canyon that goes through Taiwan. I've flown over it. I've never been in it. But it's like the Grand Canyon. I mean, it's this huge thing. I've been to Taipei many times. But in any case, so Chiang Kai-shek goes to Formosa. They name it Taiwan. He runs it as essentially a strongman dictatorship. His son takes over. And then his son dies. And democracy begins to flower. And now, in a democratic way, you've got legislation that has been, they're very spooky about this, but there's a lot of popular support for it in Taiwan, passing legislation that will say, we are really a separate nation. In the United States, I mean, they were going to do this, you'll recall. And last year, George Bush didn't go over, but basically Bush said to them, don't do it. And the reason, of course, that he said don't do it is, well, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, we don't want to get tied up in another war, particularly one with China. China has nuclear weapons. China doesn't mess around. And Taiwan doesn't have any oil, so we're not going to go to war there anyway. And you would think the Taiwanese would figure this out. You would think that the North Koreans would have figured this out. But Kim Il-jung and all this, you know, but we got no oil. Well, the United States, what are they going to do? We're not going to do anything. We're going to talk. You got oil? We're on our way. We'll be there tomorrow morning. No oil? Nah, sorry. But what we do have with China, the other reason why we're not going to go to war with China, what we do have is a mind-boggling amount of debt that we owe them. And people tend not to go to war against their bankers. Now, it used to be China owed us money. During the administration of Jimmy Carter and LBJ and Nixon and Kennedy, China owed us money. Back during the administration of Eisenhower, we were sending them food. Because millions of people were dying of famine there. This is what led to their one-child policy. My recollection is 30, 34 million, something like that, people died in China in the Great Famine in the 1950s? I remember when I was a kid, you know, if everybody, eat your vegetables, there's children starving in China. There really were. Well, that has all changed thanks to conservative economics. Corporatonomics. Let's make the world safe for multinational corporations. Who cares what impact it has on nations? Who cares what impact it has on workers in the United States? That's not the issue. The issue is GE going to have a good balance sheet this month? Is Enron going to be more profitable? Well, that was the issue. How's ExxonMobil doing this week? That's the issue. How is Walmart doing, speaking of communist China? How is Walmart doing? And so as a result of this so-called free trade, And these so-called free trade agreements and treaties like GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, and NAFTA, North American Free Trade Association, as a result of these treaties and agreements, and the creation of institutions and bodies to enforce them, like the World Trade Organization, we have turned sovereignty for our nation over to multinational corporations. People talk about one world government. The conservatives are all hysterical about the UN as a one world government. Ever since I was a little kid, and certainly long before that, back when Woodrow Wilson was trying to get the United States to join the League of Nations in 1921, or before that, 1919, 1920, the Republicans defeated it and refused to join the League of Nations. It was the Republicans who didn't want to go along with it. And the reason why was they were afraid of surrendering, and some would argue legitimately so. I don't know enough about how the League of Nations was organized, frankly, to have a strong opinion on that. But in any case, they were concerned that we were surrendering sovereignty to a world body that could become a one-world government. And keep in mind, this is what Adolf Hitler was suggesting he was doing, was he was creating a one-world government. The world will be at peace when the Third Reich rules the world. It's what the Romans were up to, the Holy Roman Empire, Pax Romania. When the Roman Empire rules the world will be at peace. It is the assertion being put forth by the neocons, they have since the late 1990s, that the United States cannot be challenged, that as long as we rule the world will be at peace. The problem is, these kinds of peace tend to be temporary. You know, balance eventually happens. So anyhow, you've got a bunch of folks, conservative, good-hearted, well-minded, well-meaning conservatives, who are very worried that by participating in the United States, and John Bolton, by the way, the guy with the bleached mustache who's now going to be our ambassador to the UN, is one of them, or historically has been, who believe that by participating in the United States nations, we are weakening ourselves. We are surrendering power. And I got to tell you, the United Nations is not responsible for the loss of 2, 3, 4, 5 million American manufacturing jobs. No, it's conservative economics and free trade. Brought to you courtesy of Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, and George Bush Jr. The United Nations is not responsible for the fact that 1 in 3 Americans are going to get cancer and we live in one of the most toxic soup. The average American has over 100 cancer-causing chemicals in their bloodstream. Now, you can thank the last half a dozen administrations for that, although the Clinton administration, at least in that regard, was really working on trying to clean that one up, as did Jimmy Carter to some extent, as did Richard Nixon, although he his feet were held to the fire. It was the Democrats who pushed it through Congress, and he signed into law the bill that created the Environmental Protection Agency in 72. So the Republicans love to give him credit for it. Nixon created the EPA. Well, you know, the Democratic Congress created it. But nonetheless, I'll give him his due. But the point is that we are surrendering our sovereignty to China and Japan and Saudi Arabia. And not just to these nations. We are surrendering our sovereignty to the multinational corporations that are the brokers of all of this. Without Walmart, we wouldn't have this huge trade deficit with China. If this is not to say Walmart is evil. It's the rules. We have set up rules that allow this to happen. But the fact of the matter is that if we did not allow super cheap, you know, the cheap labor, Chinese cheap labor to come into this country in the form of material goods. If we were to go back to the way that we did it for 200 years and say, you know, if it costs $10, if it costs a dollar to make, there's a dollar's worth of labor and a $10 pair of tennis shoes here in the United States, and you can make that same $10 pair of tennis shoes in China for 10 cents worth of labor, then you're gonna have to pay a 90 cent tax when you bring it into the United States. So it's gonna cost you a dollar in labor costs, whether you make it here or in China. Your choice. And historically, companies have said, well, gee, we're selling them here in the United States, we might as well make them here. And Reagan came along and said, we got to change this. This isn't so profitable for our corporations. They want to strip mine the world looking for cheap labor. And they've been doing it ever since. And Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush. And there's your sovereignty right there. There's your one world government. It's Walmart.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the True People's Radio. I'm Tom Harbin. 25 minutes past the hour. One of the folks in the chat room, which you can get to by going to tomharbin.com and clicking live chat, one of the folks in the chat room mentioned that after my Walmart remark, that Hillary Clinton was on the board of Walmart. True. And I suspect it'll come back to haunt her. She was on the board of directors of Walmart from 1986 to 1992. When her husband was governor of Arkansas and Walmart was headquartered in Arkansas, and Sam Walton was leading a Buy American campaign. Those of you who are old enough to remember the late 80s, Walmart's whole shtick was Buy American. Sam Walton was very into that. And then he died. And then things changed. Or maybe things changed and then he died. I don't know the exact order, but things changed. And Walmart doesn't say Buy American anymore. In fact, it's the ultimate irony. And I don't say that to defend Hillary Clinton, by the way. It's just to set the record straight. I have a feeling she's going to have a tough time explaining that one. The governor of Montana here, Brian Schweitzer, has set off a bit of a hoop-de-doop. He's a newly elected Democratic governor in Montana. And he called on George W. Bush to return his National Guardsmen. Seems that Montana had some problems in the year 2000. 2,400 wildfires burned nearly a million acres of mostly public land, 950,000 acres. And the weather patterns right now, weather was fairly wet in Montana in 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. But the weather patterns right now, oh, actually, it wasn't fairly wet. It's getting worse. Here we go. It's getting worse. The weather experts say a seven-year drought and a severely reduced snowpack could lead to a devastating summer of wildfires this year. Bruce Thorich, meteorologist with the Northern Rockies Coordination Center in Missoula, Montana. This is a hotbed of liberalism. The federal meteorologists, they're all liberals. I'm telling you, in order to get a job as a meteorologist with the federal government, you've got to be a liberal. Anyhow, he says, everything right now is pointing to the possibility of a large and damaging fire season. And so the governor says, you know, if we're going to have bad fires this summer, we need something to put them out with. And historically, the people in our state who have fought the fires have been the National Guard. Turns out, as Reuters reports today, the bulk of the National Guard's helicopters, critical in shuttling fire crews and equipment to blazes, are unavailable either because they are in Iraq or because their aviation officers, a fancy term for pilots, are in Iraq, are absent, they say, presumably in Iraq. Yeah, here's the lead of the story. Governor Brian Schweitzer has touched off a political fight with Montana Republicans after calling for the return of National Guard troops serving in Iraq to help out with what many fear will be a record-setting wildfire season. He infuriated Republican lawmakers who see his request as a way to criticize the Bush administration over Iraq. Tell that to the people whose homes are going to burn if the soldiers are not brought... You have a National Guard to guard the nation. I'm sorry, you don't have a National Guard to fight wars in foreign lands. You have an Army, a Navy, a Marine Corps, and an Air Force to fight wars in foreign lands. You have a National Guard. This is the National Militia. They're supposed to be here in event of disaster or invasion. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Time to get involved. Time to get out there. Time to get active. Welcome back. Where despair is not an option. Tom Hartman radio program here defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, this from the Associated Press this weekend, traveled to Britain with his wife, several aides, and lobbyists on a $70,000 junket, mostly paid for with money from an Indian tribe and a gambling services company. The Washington Post reported Saturday, not long after the outing, Representative DeLay, the second most powerful Republican in the House of Representatives, played a key role in killing gaming-related legislation opposed by the company and tribe. In other words, he did what they wanted. Now, DeLay is saying, oh, I didn't know. But, you know, I didn't know that these gambling companies gave us this money. You know, if somebody gave me a $70,000 week and a half vacation in Scotland. I mean, you have to work really hard to spend $70,000 in 2 weeks. We're talking the, you know, $2,500 a day presidential suite in the top hotels. We're talking traveling in helicopters and limousines. We're talking, I mean, I don't know. How do you spend $70,000 in 2 weeks? Well, Tom DeLay did it. And Edwin J. McGinn, the president of Elot, Inc., the parent company of eLottery. Now, this is a company that is, you know, it's like one of these online lottery companies. And they help pay for this trip. Right, it's paid for by an Indian tribe and this eLottery group. And he told the Washington Post, quote, it certainly was our impression that any and all monies were being positioned to get the attention and focus of our cause. In other words, we tried to buy the guy off. Of course. What do you think we give $70,000 for? Fun? I mean, I'll take the vacation for that. I know. You invest $70,000 in Tom DeLay, he passes a law that makes your company millions of dollars. That's how it works. 2 months after the trip, DeLay joined this from the Associated Press. 2 months after the trip, DeLay joined 43 other Republicans and 114 Democrats in killing the Internet Gambling Prohibition Act, which would have made it a crime to bet over the Internet. This was a bill that the people who paid for his trip opposed, and he shot it down. That's just the beginning. here from Newsweek. Now, this is the current issue of Newsweek, the one that's hitting the stands this week, which, by the way, has an article in it. I just alert you to this. There's an article in it about two new books on attention deficit disorder. And the photograph in there is kids at the Hunter School in Rumney, New Hampshire, which is a school that I started, or I helped start. And hunterschool.org is the website for it. So it's kind of cool. We made Newsweek. My name isn't in there anywhere, but we made Newsweek. The school did. God bless them. It's a nonprofit. I'm not paid a penny for being on the board, or, you know, I haven't taken anything, you know, in decades from that group. But it's just great. So anyhow, the new issue of Newsweek also has an article about Tom DeLay. And Tom DeLay's Michael Jackson-like behavior? Well, that's actually more in the Washington Post. But here's the Newsweek. The FBI is trying to trace, this is an article by Michael Isikoff, the FBI is trying to trace what happened at $2.5 million in payments to a conservative Washington think tank that were routed to accounts controlled by two lobbyists with close ties to House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, Newsweek has learned. The group's records have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury. In the meantime, Tom DeLay decides that it's a good time to go in the hospital. You know, it's Michael Jackson's having a hard time with his trial. He's got to go to the hospital. Tom DeLay, apparently same idea. Washington Post, the ethics protest came after a week of unrelenting bad news for DeLay, who has briefly taken to a hospital Thursday after he experienced what his staff called fatigue due to a heart arrhythmia, inhaling too much bug killer when he was, you know, the guy was a pesticide. He was a bug killer before he went to Congress. In fact, the reason he went to Congress, for those of you from Texas, you already know this, the reason Tom DeLay went to Congress was because he owned a small bug-killing company, and he was so incensed over the fact that the Environmental Protection Agency and the federal government was telling him which chemicals he could spray in people's houses and which ones he couldn't, that he decided to go to Congress and change those laws. Maybe there was one particular one that he really liked to inhale. And, you know, oh boy, this is good. Wow. I like that one, yes. Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy. Good old Tom DeLay. So anyway, and now he may have, who knows, maybe that's did a little lasting damage. Two Sundays ago, notes the Washington Post, CBS 60 Minutes aired a 12-minute segment reminding a national audience that a district attorney in Austin, a Democratic district attorney, is continuing to suggest he may indict DeLay. Now, the Republicans thought they had gotten around this. As Mike Allen in the Washington Post notes, Republican leaders thought they had built a fortress against future trouble by changing House rules in January and by changing the House Ethics Committee's Republican membership in February to include members closer to Denny Hastert and Tom DeLay. The Republicans got rid of Republicans on the House Ethics Committee who were willing to say that DeLay was not ethical. How dare they? In one previously unreported example of the tight connections, Representative Lamar S. Smith, Republican of Texas, one of the committee's new members, this is from the Washington Post, was co-host of a 2002 fundraising breakfast to benefit the DeLay-founded political action committee that is now the subject of a grand jury investigation in Texas. The grand jury is looking into whether the PAC improperly used corporate funds to influence the outcome of state legislative races. You see, there's a law in Texas that says that corporations can't give money to politicians. But they did to Tom DeLay. So what's the response? Well, the Republicans in Texas right now are trying to change the law retroactively. Let's change the law so what was a crime is no longer a crime, and it wasn't back then either, by the way.
We have a Wayback Machine. Step into the Wayback Machine, Mr. Peabody, and we'll take you back to 2001 and undo the law.
Yes. DeLay's Legal Defense Fund received contributions from two of the new Ethics Committee members, Smith and Representative Tom Cole. So They put, this is incredible. The ethics committee that's looking into Tom DeLay, they put on the committee, they take off the committee a couple of Republicans and replace them with two other Republicans, two guys from Texas, that Tom DeLay was giving money to. Aren't you shocked? Aren't you just shocked? Oh, my. With thanks to the Center for American Progress, DeLay's Dirty Dozen. He's been a busy man, says the Center for American Progress. He raises corporate cash for Trumpac. DeLay is embroiled in a scandal in Texas for his active participation in illegally funneling corporate funds to assist state political campaigns. This is Political Action Committee, Texans for Republican Majority, TRMPAC, or TRIMPAC, it's called. Under criminal investigation, documents show DeLay, quote, personally forwarded at least one large check, end quote, to the group and was, quote, in direct contact with lobbyists for some of the nation's largest companies, end quote, on TRIMPAC's behalf. That's a crime. DeLay bribes a congressman to vote for Medicare. DeLay has admitted offering to endorse Senator Nick Smith's son, Brad, who was running for Congress at the time, in exchange for Smith's yes vote on the Medicare bill. That's called bribery. It's also a violation of the Ethics Committee rules, or the Ethics House Ethics Committee, and so they publicly admonished him. This is another way of saying they slapped his wrist. And then, after the House leaders got really upset, they got Smith to retract his statement that DeLay had offered a $100,000 bribe for his vote. This is when DeLay extended the roll call on the Medicare bill for nearly 3 hours to avoid losing the... This is the thing that has Bernie Sanders to this day, so rip-roaring angry, he can hardly speak straight. DeLay uses taxpayer money for a partisan stunt. The House Ethics Panel rebuked DeLay, another rebuke, for using government resources to help locate a private plane he thought was carrying Texas Democratic legislators. This is against the law, you see, to use tax dollars for political purposes. Tom DeLay did it anyway. Another one, Tom DeLay pays for a golf tournament with cash meant for kids. He used a children's charity, Celebrations for Children Incorporated, as a cover for collecting soft money from anonymous interest groups. Anonymous. Well, anonymous to you and me, right? Some of which was used for, quote, dinners, a golf tournament, a rock concert, Broadway tickets, and other fundraising events, end quote, at the Republican convention in New York City. Because the money was supposedly for charity, companies wishing to curry favor with DeLay were able to do so without revealing themselves as campaign donors. Isn't that sweet? Of course, it's illegal. But if you're going to give tax exemption to a charity, the whole point of tax-exempt status for a charity is that they're doing something that's so important that we're gonna cut them a break. We're going to give them a break. They're serving some social good that's so important that we're willing to subsidize them by not asking them to pay taxes. Like the Hunter School, for example, that the school for ADHD kids that we helped start in New Hampshire. It's a nonprofit. I'm on the board. They don't pay me a penny. It doesn't make any money. It doesn't distribute dividends. It doesn't, you know, have a huge salary for its CEO. None of that stuff. Because it's a nonprofit. Well, if you're going to give a nonprofit tax-exempt status, they better do things right. Well, in Tom DeLay's case, Celebrations for Children, Inc. did something, DeLay thought it was right. Throwing parties for Republicans at the RNC. Well, that's a reasonable cause, isn't it? Ah, yes. DeLay promises seat at table for donor. In one of his three public rebukes, the House Ethics Committee cited the belief on the part of executives at an energy company. This is Westar Energy. Remember when this happened? That a 56,000, the executives of this energy company, they put up $56,000 for Tom DeLay when he was working on energy legislation that would influence their bottom line, their profitability. Why? Well, they said, in writing. Some would argue that it's a bit of a mistake to say these things in writing, but they did. That giving Tom DeLay $56,500 would get them, quote, a seat at the table, end quote, where key energy legislation is being drafted. And then Westar, this energy company, has a fundraiser at the Homesteaders Resort in the summer of 2002. Just as the House-Senate conference on major energy legislation was about to get away, to get underway. Yes, $56,500 to Tom DeLay, make millions. I'm telling you, he's whatever Jeff Gannon was making. People were being taken advantage of because, I mean, you know, it's people, you invest money in Tom DeLay and you get a much better return. Well, who am I to know? I suppose I shouldn't say that. I've never used the services of Jeff Gannon, so I don't know. I haven't used the services of Tom DeLay either, but they're a little more publicly documented, I suppose. DeLay takes money from Protection Prison Company with legislation pending. Here you got Corrections Corporation of America, CCA. This is one of the companies that here in Vermont, they're taking some of our prisoners and shipping them off to these, and we're hearing horror stories. $100,000 they gave to Tom DeLay, just as DeLay was about to work on some legislation that might have privatized up to half of Texas's jails. You think they might have, you know, again, give them $100,000, make a million, make $5 million, make $30 million, make $50 million, make $100 million. It's a good investment. Rami, you got to turn that speaker down out there. It's so loud, it's I'm hearing an echo. In 1999, Tom DeLay, here's another one. DeLay blocks legislation for partisan vendetta. In 1999, DeLay received a private rebuke. This is another variation on slapping the hand. For threatening retaliation against the Electronic Industries Association when the trade group named a Democrat to head its Washington operation. To punish the group, DeLay stopped two uncontroversial trade bills that would have benefited the EIA, Electronic Industries Association, and told the association it would lose all GOP access unless it hired a Republican instead. You can't have Tom DeLay telling a trade organization, you can't hire Democrats. The group still hired the Democrat, but a little later they quietly hired the House Republican staff member who promptly showed up at a fundraiser for Tom DeLay's arm pack. What a surprise. It just goes on and on. I mean, how long is this guy going to survive? There's nine more of these. I'm not going to bore you with them. This has got to be one of the most corrupt leaders of one of the most corrupt parties in the history of the United States. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, when the road was full of mud. I've come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And speaking of Tom DeLay and pornography, well, the pornography of political corruption. Here's the real pornography. Addicted to porn, members of Congress accept political contributions from porn purveyors. This from the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW. Senator Joe Lieberman took $16,000, who, you know, used to join William Bennett in criticizing folks. Congressman Fred Upton, Senator John McCain, $46,000. Upton took $56,000. $17,000 went to Canada's Senator Sam Brownback. And it's remarkable. Let's see. And who's this guy? Representative Heather Wilson, $47,000 from porn profits. This is from the big purveyors of porn, the major corporate purveyors of porn, not from the Larry Flints of the world. Jeff in Boulder on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Nice show today.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got got a question. Do you think that it might be time now to start trying to put out the message of some, you know, maybe a little campaign slogan like it's time to support peace as, you know, as a sort of opposition to support the troops kind of thing, or, you know, an alternate message? How much flack would the Democratic Party take over promoting something like that?
You're talking about bringing the troops home from Iraq?
Well, I'm referring to the fact that, well, you know, let's just face it. If we want to be completely honest about this, we have a president who doesn't even support this war on terror. If he supported it, he'd be paying for it.
Well, and beyond that, there is no such thing as a war on terror. I mean, it's a rhetorical device. It's a rhetorical device. You can't have a, it's like saying we're going to have a war on hitting people in the face. It's, you know, terror is a mechanism. It's not a person. It's not a state. It's not, you can't have a war, you know, against an abstraction.
Is it time to start framing this message now?
Well, yes and no. I am concerned there are, and this is the challenge that MoveOn.org was facing that got written about. I think personally a little unfairly in Common Dreams this week and I think in The Nation. Are they sufficiently anti-war? I mean, the reality is that we're now in Iraq, and I'm of the opinion that we're an irritant, that we're the cause of more problems than we're the solution for. However, I may be wrong. I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a reasonable debate about, yeah, we're there. How quickly do we get out? Do we get out in a week? Do we get out in a month? Do we get out in 6 months? There's no doubt in my mind that before the next congressional elections, there's going to be a substantial change there. I'm frankly, with regard to Iraq, not as worried about that as I am about Bush creating another war somewhere else.
Right,
you know,
we'll move
Syria,
on to Syria
or
Iran. Iran or something like that.
Yeah, or China, God forbid.
China.
This is a guy who just thrives on war. He loves war. He's so excited by it. He loved killing people when he was governor of Texas. The high point of his week was, you know, when he got signed death warrants. He signed more than any governor in the history of the United States. And told jokes about it and laughed about it and bragged about it. And I just, you know, that concerns me. Should we have a peace movement? I suspect perhaps so, Jeff. I'm just not clear yet how to frame it in a way that's going to sound to the average American like something more than just peaceniks. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if you have any further thoughts on it, give me a shout. I got to wrap up the show now, though. But thanks for calling and raising the issue. It's a good one. Good to hear from you. It's a remarkable day, isn't it? It's just a remarkable day. It's Tom Hartman with you. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to Rama for showing up today, too. He's been a great help.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Radio.